Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back. Hour two of the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Friday edition. And I told you we saved the best for Friday because I got the finest of guests. He is our good friend, James Santel, former U.S. attorney. Jim, you're always a welcome sight on a Friday, man. Welcome back.
I'm glad to be with you and glad to have some good conversation once again on a Friday afternoon, Mike.
I cannot remember having so much legal fodder, so much topic for conversation. Let's start with Joe Biden, Supreme Court nominee. They're calling her KBJ these days, Ketanji Brown Jackson. First and foremost, your impression of her performance, and it was performance art of sorts, her performance, her temperament at these confirmation hearings, Jim.
And often called kabuki theater for a variety of reasons. That is, questions asked, not always answered, and questions asked that are not always relevant. That certainly is a part of this proceeding. Judge Jackson, the epitome of grace under a lot of, not so much fire, but again, questions that were beyond the scope of what you should really be answering. Someone who obviously was there to school in many ways, members of the United States Senate about everything, how everything works, including the sentencing guidelines, what a federal public defender does, what the role of victims are, what a probation office does, a huge amount of client representation issues. And I think she not only got the better of those arguments and those discussions, but really did a great civics job on behalf of for all of us in America to tell us about what she does and who she is about. So aside from that technical performance, also, we got a sense of who this is as a human being. Obviously, a very, very poised, very bright, very articulate, meticulous in terms of precision, in terms of what she's done as a district court judge and appellate court judge, just the kind of person we want in the Supreme Court, applying the law to the facts to the law, and doing it in a way that advances the rule of law. So anybody watching that who has anything other than that impression of her was not seeing the entire presentation and not getting a feel for what she really is all about.
Well, Jim, if there was kabuki theater going on, it was coming almost entirely from the right. Josh Hawley, Ted Cruz, Lindsey Graham, Du Clair, they were all in on trying to make this nominee look bad. And for a variety of reasons, but each and every one really was kind of mugging it up for the camera. And in fact, perhaps it was Ben Sasse, I forget, Thune, one of the Republican senators said, you know, I'm kind of getting sick of this jackassery. And he was sitting next to Ted Cruz. Jim, what about the jackassery of the right?
A lot of that, and again, inappropriate. This should be an opportunity, again, for certainly the senators to explore what kind of a judicial temperament the candidate has, the nominee has. This should be an information gathering type session. And yes, she can be pressed upon her own views, her history as an appellate court judge, her experience as a district court judge, as a public defender, as a law clerk, as someone in private practice. All of that is appropriate. This positioning, this jockeying, if you will, talking about racist babies, talking about all sorts of other issues.
What about her religion on a scale of 1 to 10, Jim? What about that?
Of 1 to 10. And again, underscoring the ways in which she responded to those appropriately. In many, many cases, not taking the bait of engaging in the policy discussions about things like immigration and healthcare and economic issues, all kinds of things that are not appropriate for any judge to be pontificating about. She didn't do that, and yet she did it with style and with grace. And again, looking just at the back and forth between the two of them, the Hawleys of the world, the Ted Cruzes of the world, did not get the better of this at all, even though they seem to be, as you indicated, Mike, smug and self-important. In fact, she was the one who came out on top on all of these kinds of issues, both substantively and in terms of her own demeanor.
Jim, I saw polling of the American people. This candidate, this nominee more accurately, very popular. The most popular nominee since John Roberts. And obviously, he didn't have much trouble getting on the court. We saw the Senate Minority Leader, Mitch McConnell, came out today. I will not support her. And he's sending a signal to his caucus, as he often does. When he publicly announces how he's going to vote, he's effectively telling his caucus, you vote like me. So does the confirmation margin matter? Because my understanding is Joe Manchin's, he's shown his cards. He is voting to confirm. Well, she's going to be the next Supreme Court justice, Jim. Does the margin of confirmation matter? It's going to be remembered in history, I suspect.
It certainly will be. And we recall well that as late as the nomination of Antonin Scalia, in which there were no votes, we recall the nomination and the review of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, 3 votes in opposition to her, again, during the Clinton administration. And so we have moved from this time when there was truly an assessment, same with John Roberts, an assessment of whether or not a particular candidate, regardless of who the president is who's nominating them, if you're qualified for the job, can you apply, once again, the facts of the law and come to a reasonable decision? Can you be someone who will promote justice, due process, equal protection, as opposed to this pontificating about what politics or policy should be all about? The margin is going to be razor thin. We all know what's going to happen here now with Manchin indicating he will vote in support of her. We're going to have to get Kamala Harris again to work in a role as the president of the Senate and cast the 51st vote. So she will be confirmed sometime in the month of April. The margin I would offer is less a reflection of the legitimacy and the strength of her candidacy, her nomination, what she brings to this, and more a reflection of the time in which regrettably, it has become highly politicized, frankly, on both sides. We know that, but nonetheless, should not be viewed as an indication that the United States Senate really had some great problems with her quality, her reliability, her qualifications to be a United States Supreme Court justice. That's not what history will write about this.
Folks, you are listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Got a fine guest. He is former U.S. Attorney James Sandell. Most importantly, friend and great resource of mine. Jim, the other big Supreme Court story or stories this week, Clarence Thomas, Justice Thomas, apparently had flu-like symptoms. He was in the hospital. And while he was convalescing, Jim, some big stories, some big news breaking about his wife, Jenny, with the G and an I, Jenny Thomas. And Jenny Thomas apparently sent out 29 text messages, or at least there were 29 text messages exchanged between her and the former president's chief of staff, Mark Meadows. And a lot of this stuff is, you know, Jesus help us overturn this election sort of stuff. Jim, first and foremost, let's speak to the fact that when the question of the Meadows text and documents, because Meadows stopped supplying these documents, and when the question ran all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, only one justice had the dissent, let's call it, and it was Clarence Thomas. And the fact, Jim, that his own wife's text messages were contained in the documents he was ruling upon. I mean, I realize there's not much of a recusal rule here, Jim, but come on, if you don't recuse, then when would you?
Spot on, Mike. Absolutely. This is outrage. This is outrage. Again, when you've got Jenny Thomas with a G and an I, Virginia, but she goes by Jenny, is telling the chief of staff, Mark Meadows, obviously, before Donald Trump leaves office, among other things, release the Kraken, save us from the left, taking America down. Now, she has the absolute right, a First Amendment right as an American citizen to be petitioning government. Not all of us have the direct text line for the chief of staff. I don't know what Ron Klain's direct number is these days, but she can do that. That's not the problem here. She can, frankly, organize She can't advocate for insurrection, but she can organize, as apparently she did, the Ellipse event on January 6th. She can advocate what she wants. And if she feels strongly, she'd be wrong that the election was stolen. But she can do all those things. The point is, her, she is married to, she is partnered with someone who's deciding on those very kinds of issues, as you just indicated. In addition to being the one dissenting vote, as you indicated, Mike, in this case involving whether or not the archives should get the 700 documents that Donald Trump was contesting. I recall he was also within the dissent on this Pennsylvania case, this mail-in ballot case, likewise seeking disqualification of the voting there. So this is a fellow who's had a record not only of deciding these cases, but importantly, playing in this field. That is not only the perception of impropriety and of conflict of interest. That is impropriety and conflict of interest. You're making a substantive decision about a matter that can, in fact, have a direct impact upon exactly what your spouse, your partner, with whom you have a personal and presumably also financial and other association relationship with. That's exactly what we don't want any judges to do. It is a problem because the Supreme Court does not have the high standards that do in fact apply to appeals court judges like Ketanji Brown Jackson and like district court judges. John Roberts needs to be an advocate. I know he's pushed off and said, we do not want any further intrusion. John Roberts needs to be an advocate for the assumption, the embracing of rules that prevent this from happening. At a minimum, I am hoping that John Roberts and maybe Sam Alito, others are looking at Clarence Thomas right now and saying, let's have lunch. We need to talk about this. You can't be participating in these decisions when they go to the benefit or even having any impact, whether they're benefit or not, on your spouse. That cannot be happening. And the other problem with this, of course, is not only does it undermine integrity of those decisions, but it sends a message to the American public. Mike, you and I have talked about this repeatedly. What is the Supreme Court doing? If in fact you have this appearance and the reality of impropriety, people tend to look more and more at just judgments and rulings of the Supreme Court and say, not legitimate. Why? Because they have this conflict. And therefore, we don't have respect for government. We don't place the importance that we should place in the decisions it's making. That's when a democracy, a republic begins to fail. This is no less significant than any of that.
Well, Jim, after some of the recent rulings of this U.S. Supreme Court, I am holding them in lower esteem. I couldn't hold you in higher esteem, though. James Antel, my fine guest, former U.S. attorney, come back with Jim and Crudy and Evan and you, Devil's Advocates. Wake up.